FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and hey, today's the day, May 21st, 2018. And as always, be a part of the show, make my day, send me an email, kl@kerrylutz.com. Well, sometimes FSN imitates life, and other times life imitates FSN. I'm talking about a little-known measure that I thought Mickey Fulp and I, the mercenary geologists, were the only ones that followed it. And lo and behold, today, John Rubino over at dollarcollapse.com, who you'll hear from shortly, informs me the journal is very concerned about the WTI to Brent crude ratio, which right now stands at 1.10. It's been all over the place. I mean, at its bottom, and this took place, God, back in 2016, almost 2 years ago, it was at 1.0 parity. But unusual, Brent always trades at a premium to WTI. And there are certain market reasons for that, not going to go into. John will talk about it. But there are reasons why WTI trades at a discount to Brent. And now with the U.S. exporting oil, everything's changing. Relationships change. Well, one relationship that hasn't is John Rubino and I. We are always here on Monday to hopefully edify you and make you think about world markets. Again, check out John's site, dollarcollapse.com. John, happy Monday.
Hey, Kerry.
That was a little long-winded. Sorry, but
sorry about that.
I couldn't resist. I couldn't resist.
I was just going to say that's it is pretty funny that the Wall Street Journal comes out with a story on an indicator that has been your indicator for years. You and Mickey Fulp have been following this thing for quite a while.
Hey, I should have patented it, right?
Or at least traded on it for a big profit.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
what the journal is saying, they're quoting experts who say that when oil prices traded globally are much higher and trending higher than oil traded in the U.S., that's a sign of tightness in the market, and that the oil that we're exporting is insufficient to hold back the price of oil globally, and that we're looking at maybe a spike in prices going forward. But the work you did says that maybe the opposite is true, right?
Yeah, well, look, we've been tracking this, Mickey and I, for 6.5 years. Okay, 6.5 years we've been tracking it. It's meaningless at best. And at worst, it could mean exactly the opposite, because what's going to determine the level of markets, the prices? It's going to be the traders who supposedly reflect underlying demand and supply. And this is a great arbitrage, because when it starts getting a little out of whack, then the arbitragers will run in. More so now than they used to, because the U.S. is a major, almost one of the largest petroleum exporters in the world, they're going to be able to effectively increase supply somewhat. Don't listen to what they say. This is a case of cycles making the news rather than news determining the cycles. Because if oil prices hadn't been going up, the Wall Street Journal would have ignored this, all right? It's a meaningless statistic. And let me give you another one. You know, nat gas in the U.S. is around, I haven't looked at it past few weeks, but it's around 280-something per million BTUs. And you go to Asia, it's $15 per million BTUs. And you go to Europe, and it's over 10. And yet, you know, it's had no effect on anything other than the U.S. has shut in production. They won't produce dry gas at these low prices below $3 per million BTU. It's not cost effective. Wet gas is always profitable, but this is just a case where the cycle dictates the news, not the news dictating the cycle. And this is a perfect example of it. Oil prices might very well head higher, but they very well might not either, because there's a limit. According to Nenner, one of the best cycle guys out there, I know there's a lot of you that don't think so, but I personally do. He said oil prices peaked. They're going back down to 62. So you know what, John? I don't know what conclusion I reached or brilliance I have unleashed upon you, but point is, don't believe everything you read.
Well, that right there is a good lesson. And now we'll all watch and see what oil does and see if this indicator actually, you know, does mean anything one way or the other. Yeah. It sounds like it could mean something as you're presenting it, that when the spread gets really wide, you know, intuitively you would think there'd be an arbitrage that brings it back into balance, which could happen easily with lower prices instead of high. I don't know. There's a lot of moving parts out there these days.
Yeah, well, it's just like platinum and palladium. You know, platinum's been below the price of gold for years now, and now it's below the price of palladium. And it's a great arbitrage because you should be buying platinum, selling palladium if you're into that stuff. Me, I don't have a trader's temperament, can't do it. But it's just those anomalies that pop up in markets from time to time, and I wouldn't read too much into it.
Yeah. Okay. But there are other things going on out there that probably do mean something. So we could talk a little bit about Italy if you'd like to.
Yeah.
My people are in the news again.
Hey, your people, man. Hey, well, they brought us pizza. They brought us Rome. They brought us so much. I was going to say pasta, but you know, the Chinese did that. But my point is the euro and the dollar rally really have confirmed that all is not well in Euroland. And now that the Euroskeptic government in Italy has been elected, what does that tell us, John?
Well, Italy is actually a pretty big economy. It's the third biggest economy in the Eurozone. So it has a lot of impact. When it does something, everybody else feels it. And Italy just elected basically a coalition of different kinds of populists who are united by a distaste for the current system. They disagree on pretty much everything else, but they don't like the way the euro and the EU are run, because they see it as benefiting Germany at the expense of the peripheral countries in the eurozone. And so their goal is to either get the rules changed to make them more favorable for, you know, less efficient countries like Italy and Greece and Spain, or just leave the whole thing, go back to the lira, and then be able to devalue their currency whenever they want to. To them, there's a good old days idea, which is when they had their own currency. And so they would overspend and get themselves into financial trouble, but then they would just devalue the currency, kind of reset the game, and then start over again. And to them, that was better than living continuously under a strong currency regime, which just grinds inefficient countries into poverty. You look at Greece, obviously, as the poster child for that. They've been in a depression for a decade. But Italy is heading that way fast because they're only afloat because they can borrow huge amounts of money. Mm-hmm. And they can only borrow huge amounts of money because everybody assumes that the European Central Bank will bail Italy out of any trouble they get into, which means basically that the European or Italian bonds are in effect German bonds, because Germany stands behind the European Central Bank. So, of course, we'll lend money to Italy at negative rates for 1 year and less than U.S. Treasuries at the 10-year.
We're happy. We're happy to do it. Right.
We're happy to do that because we're really lending money to Germany. Mm-hmm. But now if Italy is going to either demand that the rules are changed or start making plans for leaving the eurozone, then the European Central Bank isn't as ready, willing, and able to bail that government out. And you're seeing the effect in Italy's bond market, where 10-year Italian bonds, for instance, which very recently yielded less than 2% and actually less than 1.8%. You know, they were really low yielding, even compared to U.S. government 10-year bonds. They're now up in the twos. They've spiked their yields and they're heading higher from here because all of a sudden people are looking at these bonds and thinking, oh, maybe they're actually Italian bonds after all. And we're lending money to Italy. I don't know if I want to do that for 2%.
Yeah.
and so all of a sudden Italy's finances got much, much worse. And it's, you know, it's hard to say how this plays out because there are a lot of different ways it could go. It could go the Greek way, where Italy stays within the Eurozone, but is just kind of ground down by the fact that it can no longer borrow on favorable terms. And it kind of sort of has to live within its means, which it absolutely can't do.
No, there's no way.
And its banking system collapses. The Italian banks have non-performing loans that I haven't seen the recent number, but not so long ago, it was like 16%, which is fatal for an individual bank. But that was the entire banking system of Italy.
Yeah.
At that time. So that's not a viable system. It's not, it's a failed state in every way except its ability to borrow. You take that away and Italy's toast as a political and economic entity. And it's heading that way, one way or another now. So the question is, does it take the entire Eurozone down with it? Or is it an isolated crisis? I don't think there are scenarios in which everything kind of goes along happily from here and everybody's healthy and safe and able to borrow money continuously at these rates going forward. That's not going to happen. So something is going to have to happen to resolve this, but it's not clear what. And a lot of it depends on what the Italian government thinks it can get away with. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. But it's conceivable that the Eurozone itself is at risk here because, for instance, with Brexit, the Great Britain was not part of the Eurozone. It was part of the European Union. So it was disruptive when they left, but not existentially threatening. But Italy is not just part of the EU, it's part of the Eurozone. Its currency is the currency of Europe. Let them try to leave. And all of a sudden, you've got some really thorny questions that you have to answer. For instance, what happens with all those Italian bonds that are denominated in euros? Will they be switched over to lira? And then will they fall by 50% the day that happens? And will that bankrupt a bunch of European banks and probably American banks? And then will the governments in question bail out their banks at the expense of the value of their currencies and their national budgets, et cetera, et cetera. You can really picture a death spiral that flows from Italy taking the worst set of actions that are on the table right now.
Well, you do know that they will be bailed out, just like Deutsche Bank was bailed out last time. And Deutsche Bank needs to be bailed out again, right? What's changed with Deutsche Bank?
Absolutely. The governments of the world will absolutely bail their banks out. But that's not an unlimited process. You can't keep doing that and then still expect everybody to look at your currency as a risk-free asset.
Yeah.
So
we know it's heading.
Yeah, yeah. We just don't know what the number is that blows the system up. In other words, how much can you spend bailing out your banks before your currency no longer functions for that purpose? And I'm sure it's up there in the trillions, but we've already done trillions. You know, can we do another $10 or $15 trillion like we did last time around? Maybe not. We don't know. See, that's the thing. You don't know going in what you can get away with in this kind of currency mismanagement. And by the time you find out that what you're doing is unacceptable to the market, it's game over. You can't just take it back and say, oh, never mind. We'll let all our banks go bust after all, because then you've got a different kind of crisis. Mm-hmm. And we're heading for that time when we try something that has worked in the past but doesn't work. And everybody just all of a sudden looks up. You know, they pull their heads out of the sand and say, hey, wait a minute. Fiat currency doesn't work anymore, you know, and then it's completely game over. Yeah. So the list of catalysts that could bring that about are pretty long, or is pretty long. And Italy is certainly on the list. And it's moving from the back burner to the front burner with its new government. So this is going to be fun to watch from a safe distance.
Yeah, from a very safe distance, if there is such a thing in today's interconnected, intertwined, worldwide economy.
That's the function of precious metals. That is your safe distance from financial crises. So all roads lead back to gold and silver when stuff like this starts happening.
Very, very true. And yep, I couldn't agree with you more. It's really fascinating to see the whole thing unravel. And effectively, you know, the dollar has been going up against the euro for the past 3-4 weeks. And I guess we found out why, right?
Oh, yeah. Italy trying to withdraw from the eurozone would definitely tank the euro relative to the dollar. So we are probably seeing safe haven currency flows propping up the dollar right now. Although the dollar had a big decline, so just for technical reasons, it should have bounced off that bottom. So we don't know for sure what is doing what. But certainly, Europe now has an added element of risk after the Italian election, which would, other things being equal, make the euro weaker than it would have been. So we're probably seeing an element of that, too.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think alarm bells are sounding, and not for the reasons that the Wall Street Journal said. I think alarm bells are ringing because the system's getting stretched. Things are beginning to, you know, there's cracks appearing. Maybe we're kind of like where we were at the beginning of 2007, where the weaknesses in the system start becoming very obvious and very worrisome to those of you who are actually watching and care about such things, which doesn't seem to be many of us out there, John.
No. But, oh, Kerry, the other thing that's happening concurrently with Italy is the emerging market crisis now. And they're closely related, I think. And you could actually call someplace like Italy or Spain or Greece an emerging market in some ways, because they have elements of that. But the emerging markets, which include Brazil and Argentina and Venezuela and lots of other countries in Latin America, all borrowed a lot of dollars over the past few years, because their assumption was that they had their financial houses in order and their currencies were going to go up versus the dollar. So borrow dollars and then pay them back with your ever strengthening currency. Well, that didn't work. So the dollar started to go back up, and now all of a sudden, all these loans out there, there are, I forget the number, there's several trillion dollars of loans from in emerging markets denominated in dollars, which are getting much more expensive all the time. So to the extent that the Italian thing makes the dollar go up, that feeds back into emerging markets in a negative way. So you've got a really destabilizing negative feedback loop going on here that could be a big deal.
Yeah, that could be a very big deal. And God only knows what's going to happen next here. That's for sure. But okay, uncertainty is starting to creep in, and that means that the risk on, risk off thing is going to come back again in all likelihood. Hey, we're just going to have to see, but you can be sure something's going on. So therefore, we come back to precious metals yet again. If things are starting to crack, and they might take a year or two for the cracking to become obvious to the untrained eye. But Deutsche Bank, not a good sign. Chinese banks, not in good territory. You know, a lot of things really. Hey, we didn't even talk about the trade war, whether that's going to happen or not, John.
Yeah. Well, part of the reason stocks are up in the U.S. is that it looks like the U.S. and China are on the verge of cutting a deal, which is pretty much par for the course with Trump's strategy, you know, extreme threat followed by talks followed by a deal. It's, you know, it's not very relaxing the way this is working out, but it is kind of working out. And so if we end up with something like China committing to buy some, you know, number in the hundreds of billions of dollars of new U.S. stuff every year that brings the trade deficit down to acceptable levels, the markets seem to like that.
Hey, I just want them to keep buying our garbage. I don't care about anything else. Just as long as they keep buying American garbage, everything is going to be fine.
It's one of our biggest exports.
Fifth largest.
You can't cut us off. We're the OPEC of garbage.
Yeah, it's the nerve of them to not want our garbage. I mean, where do they get off here, John?
Yeah.
I mean,
what
really?
Are we supposed to do with our garbage if we can't sell it to developing countries? Jeez.
Yeah, it's a valuable commodity.
What about our nuclear waste? Who gets that now? I don't remember how
Nevada. That's Nevada. That's what Trump wants to do. He wants to ship it all to Nevada and let them deal with it. You know, Yucca Mountain. Whatever it takes, just get rid of this stuff and be done with it. All right. And if we can't export our way out of this garbage mess, then we're going to have to start burning the crap because we got too much of it and nobody really wants it buried in your backyard. Right.
Yeah. You know, we need to talk about bioplastics someday.
Oh, that's a great thing. You know, we've been experimenting with it for a couple of decades, but now they finally have come up with a plastic that will really disintegrate in landfills. And hey, amen to that. But if it disappears in the landfill, then how are we going to sell it to China?
Yeah,
that's a problem.
One of our big exports.
This is a big problem.
Well, you know, at the same time they're doing that, somebody found a bacteria that eats plastic.
Yes.
So we have two different ways of going about this now. And the bacteria that eats plastic sounds like, you know, the downside of that, the risk of it, sounds like so much fun that I almost think we should do that and just let it loose and have it eat all the plastic in the world and see what happens.
I think it's great.
Yeah.
I think it's great. But in the meantime, this is we need China. We can't do without them. Trade wars be damned. Just take our freaking garbage. It's all we ask. I mean, is that too much to ask, really?
And stop stealing our intellectual property.
Yeah, the combination of the two. Take our garbage and don't take our intellectual property, please. And that's the basis of a trade policy, right?
Well, we'll see. This is going to resolve pretty soon here.
Yeah,
so it could well be that we have a trade deal with China, at least in structural terms, in place by the time you and I talk next, Kerry. So the world is changing fast.
I think it will. I definitely think it will. And hey, I told you there wasn't going to be a trade war. Economic war, yeah, but trade war, no. Anyways, John, that's it for today. We're doing it later than usual, but we'll be back to our regularly scheduled time. And make sure you check out John's site. It's dollarcollapse.com. John, you're a prolific writer. Lots of articles coming out. Original content, as they say, in the website biz. And you're not going to find it anyplace else but there. We both have newsletters, dollarcollapse.com, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. I'm shipping mine out tomorrow morning. So those of you who are subscribed, you will get it bright and early. And for your digestion. And hey, tweet us at Kerry Lutz, and the Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. John, till next week.
Thanks, Kerry. Talk to you then.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.